Thank you for listening to this audio recording from LimoPlanet 2020 Free the Future. The following talk was presented at LimoPlanet, the Free Software Foundation's annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology. For more information on LimoPlanet, visit limoplanet.org/conference. LimoPlanet is a live conference with speakers who often use visual slides in their presentations. We have only selected talks for this audio feed that do not overly rely on visuals, but if you would like to see a speaker's slides, they are available at media.limoplanet.org. LimoPlanet speakers do not represent the Free Software Foundation. As part of our mission to show how important free software is to everyone, we have speakers talking about their use of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take positions on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedoms of all computer users, LimoPlanet is made possible by thousands of individuals who, like you, donate what they can. To keep this work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss.
Hello, everyone, participants of LibrePlanet 2020. My name is Jim Garrett. I'm the room monitor for the Freedom Room. We have in this session two guests. The person who's appearing in your program is Devin Ulibarri. He's joined by colleague Walter Bender, and they are together going to present on Sugar Labs, Past, Present, and Future. We also have an IRC channel open, #LibrePlanet_room_freedom. Please post questions there, and I'll be monitoring that, queuing them up, and we'll have a Q&A period at the end of the session. So with that, take it away, Devin and Walter.
Okay, thanks very much. I'm going to share my screen and get this thing started, so bear with me as I try to make the magic work. So share your screen. Share and get to the right window. Here we go. And run. Meow. Okay, good. I'm started. So I first time I gave a talk at LibrePlanet. It was actually in 2008, and I talked about sugar. I guess that was Sugar Past, and I had a long discussion after my talk with John Gilmore. And part of the idea behind sugar is the software that we originally wrote for the One Laptop Per Child project. You see the picture of the laptop here. But part of the goal behind sugar was to really push the envelope in terms of what we meant by software libre. There's sort of this East Coast, West Coast thing. On the West Coast, they talk about open source, and on the East Coast, we say software libre because we want to not just have access to the source, we want to guarantee freedom to do things with the source, hence libre. But Sugar took it a step further in the sense that we wanted to say, okay, it's not just enough to have access to the code and a license to do something with the code, but the code itself should be in a form that makes it accessible. And in particular, since our target is children, elementary and middle school children are our biggest users, we wanted to make sure that the software made sense to them. So some of what we did, we spent a lot of time working on trying to write code with a certain clarity to it, which I think everybody aspires to. We also did a bunch of other things, and some of those things I'm gonna talk about because they're still relevant in Sugar Present today. But let me start first by but what John basically had asked me, what he challenged me on, was said, okay, you're trying to make the software be accessible to kids. How many patches have you gotten from kids? How many commits are there from kids? Because if it's truly accessible, isn't that really the measure, whether they're actually able to make changes and be true contributors to the community? And at the time, in 2008, we were still pretty young, pretty new, and my answer to John was, well, none. We don't have any commits from kids. And I'm going to actually jump to the punchline and say that although it's tailed off a little bit in recent years, we peaked at about 50% of our commits coming from kids. And I think of all the things that I'm sort of proud of in terms of what Sugar was able to accomplish, that's it. We really did and still maintain a platform where it's not just Software Libre, but it's Software Libre where the end users really are engaged in a really deep fashion, making contributions. So I want to start off, this is the title of Devin's my talk, and I always like to start off by quoting Alan Kay. His definition of what is technology, I think, really sums it up quite well, and it's really relevant, again, to the age group that we're targeting with Sugar, and that is technology is anything invented after you were born. And, you know, I then I'll follow up with this picture. This is me and my grandson sitting in our kitchen doing some work. I'm on my laptop running Fedora. He's on his laptop running Sugar. And he's actually, this picture was from quite a few years ago. He's 7 now, and he's a programmer. And maybe at the end of the talk, we can even look at some of the things that he's coded. So the basic idea behind Sugar from the very beginning in terms of pedagogy comes from the work of Seymour Papert and Marvin Minsky and Cynthia Solomon. You learn through doing. So if you want more learning, you want more doing. And so we really tried to build a platform that was about tools for construction, for constructing knowledge. We didn't ever build any curriculum. It wasn't about curriculum, it was about tools and what the children would use those tools to construct. And part of that was, again, to make sure that the tools were accessible, not just in terms of using the tool, but really understanding where did that tool come from? How does it work inside? How can I make that tool be better? So this is an example from a project, a pre-One Laptop Per Child, pre-Sugar project that I was involved in with a colleague, David Cavallo, in Brazil in the mid-90s. We were doing workshops, mostly David, in the schools in Brazil. And at the time, the video arcade game Dance Dance Revolution was quite popular. And so what we did was rather than just let the kids play Dance Dance Revolution, they built their own Dance Dance Revolution machine. And they did it with very simple set sensors and with Logo and a programming environment called Turtle Art that lets them sort of snap these things together. This is all sort of pre-Scratch. It's pre sort of the maker movement, but it's all the same basic ideas. It worked back then. It works today. You know, that they get a much richer experience by building rather than just playing. And the other thing is that in the process of building, we really take the building itself becomes really important. It's not the artifact they end up with, but it's the process they use to get there. So there are all these waypoints along the way. And in particular, there's this thing called debugging that I'm going to emphasize and go into more detail on just a minute. So One Laptop Per Child, we started it at MIT in 2005. We shipped our first laptops in 2007 running Sugar software. The laptop itself was quite extraordinary, I think. As you can see, it was designed to be used by kids, where kids are. It was the first laptop, really, I think, that would survive an environment like you're seeing here. It worked outdoors. I won't go into too much more detail except to say that it was by far the greenest laptop that was ever built, probably still the greenest laptop ever. Instead of running at 50, 70, 100 watts, it ran at 5 watts. And It was the first laptop to replace the fluorescent backlight with LED backlight. That we pioneered that. First laptop to come with a camera built-in standard. We pioneered that. And, of course, sugar. But I think that the thing about the laptop, just as we sort of aspire towards open software, we also, to some degree, aspire towards open hardware. The laptops we deployed in 2007, many of them, most of them, I would say, are still in operation today. Now, we had designed it for about a five-year lifetime, but we also designed it so that the kids could fix it themselves. So the right to repair was something we thought about back then. And so every single school we went to, some group of kids would set up a little laptop hospital in the back and repair the laptops if they broke. So the reason why they still work today is because they were repairable. They were robust, but they were also repairable. And I think that the idea, the same idea held true for what we aspired to with the software. Software changes. Software needs to be maintained, and we wanted to put a lot of that responsibility in the hands of the kids themselves. And that really leads me to Sugar. This is the Sugar desktop. It looks somewhat conventional today, but at the time, I think it was quite revolutionary. A lot of the idea behind Sugar was I was trying to undo all the damage that Steve Jobs did when he went to visit Alan Kay at Xerox. And came back with all the ideas that he put into the Mac computer. He took away all the bad ideas and left all the good ideas with Alan. He took the mouse instead of touch. He took overlapping windows instead of full screen. He took double click. He took all these really terrible ideas. And he also didn't take, he took basic instead of small talk. And he didn't take the idea of open and free. So Sugar, it was my chance to get rid of all those bad things and really focus on the good things. You can see it's a bunch of icons on a screen. That's pretty commonplace today. It was not really so common back then. And each app runs full screen. And each app is a tool and interoperates with all the other tools. So a couple of other things we did. I won't go into the details of the apps themselves, but I'm assuming most of the people who are listening to this talk, if anybody's listening to this talk, are have some experience programming. And if you're a programmer, these days you probably bumped up against this wonderful thing called Git. And what Git does is it manages commits. And when you make a commit, you make a commit message. There's no getting around it. And in Sugar, whenever you do something, you also are making a commit message. You're writing down a little reflection on what you're doing and why you're doing it. And that builds up this diary or journal of your interactions over time. And it's just a really, really valuable tool for pedagogy. It's something that, again, as engineers, as developers, we don't think twice about it, but it's so foreign to the world of education. And it's something that is just so fundamental and so powerful. And then Here's the money slide in terms of this talk. One of the things that I designed all the keyboards for one laptop per child, and I put on every single keyboard a key that when you push that key, you get the source code of any program you're working on. So the source code for anything you were doing was always just one mouse click away. And then a second mouse click and you had your own copy of that source code to muck around with and break. So whatever app you were running, you could take that app, get the source code, make your own copy of it, and start to explore and break things. And this was sort of what I had presented to John back at Libre Planet in 2008. And again, his challenge was, well, are people using it? So I just want to share some data. These days, I guess people like to see some data. I don't have a lot of usage statistics because we don't track our users in any way. And it's dispersed all around the world and used in different places by different people in different circumstances. But I do have data from one study in Uruguay. Uruguay was the first country in the world to give every single child a laptop computer. Those laptop computers were all running Sugar. It's the first place on the planet where the per household penetration of computing was inversely proportional to household income, because the poor families had more kids, one laptop per child, more computers. We did a little before and after survey. Before the kids had sugar, what did they use computers for? Those who had computers used them to play games. Not a big surprise, because kids are kids. Kids play games. After they got sugar, what did they use their computers for? To play games, because they were still kids. But they also used their computers to search for information, to paint and draw, to make videos, to chat, to program, to communicate. So they use the computer to play, but they also use the computer as a tool, much the way that adults use a computer as a tool. And again, that was our goal, get them to use the computer as a tool and really own that tool. And so I think that from that perspective, sugar is a success. Did it have any impact on standardized test results? No. In some places, yes, some places, no. But that was never the goal, at least in my opinion. My opinion was to change the mindset about what computing was for, what kids are capable of, and give kids this introduction to this way into the whole world of FOSS and the power that FOSS gives us. So I want to switch gears a little bit. I should talk a little bit about sugar present, and then I'm going to talk about sugar future. Sugar present, we're still around. We're actually in the process of leaving the Software Freedom Conservancy and becoming a standalone entity. We're constantly changing, maintaining, updating, adding new things. We have sugar. Most of sugar is written in Python. It's for the most part been ported over to Python 3. We still have a big catalog of apps that haven't been ported over, but the sort of the core part of Sugar and the core apps, the ones that are mostly used, are all ported. But certainly we could use some help in that area if anybody's interested. And the project is ongoing. There are a couple of things that we're doing to try to expand the reach of Sugar. And Sugar itself right now, get it as a Fedora spin. You can get it in Ubuntu as an Ubuntu package. You can do a DNF install Sugar. You can do a Yum install Sugar. You can do a RPM. There's a Debian package. Runs really great on Raspberry Pi, for example. So it's still a very powerful desktop experience, but we're trying to broaden our horizons a little bit in a few different ways. One is that we realize, for good or for bad, not everybody's going to have access to Linux desktop. And so we wanted to make some, at least sort of the best of Sugar or some parts of Sugar available through other tools and other environments. So one of the things that I've been working on is a series of programming environments for kids that run in the browser. They're part of Sugar, but they also run directly in the browser. And and I'm going to talk a little bit about the one that Devin and I are working on in just a second. Another thing we're doing is we're going and taking the best of Sugar, our best apps. And one of my colleagues, Martin Abente Kincho, you might know him is aggressively using Flatpak to package individual Sugar activities to populate the sort of the app stores or all the Linux desktops. So we really want to get the Sugar tools we've been developing out into more places and more spaces, not just tied to Sugar itself. We also have a version of Sugar that is available, sort of a subset of Sugar that's available as a web app called Sugarizer, and that development is going as well. But the future of Sugar, I think, is to try to reach more kids and to, again, take the ideas behind Sugar, these core ideas of really that come from Software Libre, freedom and accessibility, and bring them to all corners of pedagogy and learning. So one place that we've been working, and this is where Devin and I have been collaborating for quite a number of years now, is around music. We put together a programming environment called Music Blocks, and I'm actually doing my presentation in Music Box right now. I don't use PowerPoint. I don't use Open Office for these types of things, and I don't expect the kids to either. I want them to write their own presentation software, and it's really easy to do that in an environment like Music Box. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to find a synergy between music and mathematics and programming. And I think we've really hit the sweet spot there and gotten a lot accomplished in that space. The Music Blocks environment, which I'm going to, I'll just sort of give you an idea of what that looks like. Maybe. I don't know, somehow or other my, I must have lost, I know what the problem is. It's I've got to start this again because I've got a focus problem with the, this will take just one sec. I've got a focus problem with Firefox and it had to start the program over. The sound effects, I'm not sure if you can hear them through the presentation, are all from Music Blocks. Anyway, so this is the programming environment. It's, again, the same block environment that we were using some time ago in Brazil, but sort of refined and sort of next generation of it. It combines music and graphics and programming in lots of different fun ways. And it really does get you to the heart of both what music's all about, what programming's all about. And I'm gonna actually use another example, somewhat incestuous again, from my grandson who's taking piano lessons at 7. He's been doing programming the Music Blocks for about a year now. And one of the things he's doing on piano that I think he wouldn't have done otherwise is he's been using, he's been composing. So he's not just learning to play piano, but he's also composing. He feels comfortable enough that he can not just play music that's given to him, but he can also write his own music. And I think that's directly, that sense of freedom and that sense of expression comes from his experience in programming, not from his experience on the piano. And I think that that's really, again, sort of where we want to go in the future with these tools, is to really give kids that experience. And I think that I got jammed up again because of the stupid alerts popping up on my screen. So I think I'm going to stop the presentation here. Actually, I wanted to show you one other thing. So I'm going to grab the screen one more time, real quick. And share. I wanted to talk, I had said earlier that we take debugging seriously, and I want to talk a little bit about debugging, because again, part of what makes this work is to, again, have something that has some clarity, but and has lots of ways in for the kids, and part of working with software is to be able to debug that software. So if you take debugging seriously, then suddenly the kids can start to do things you might not have expected them to be able to do. So we have a lot of different ways in which we let you debug. You can click on individual parts of your program, investigate individual subroutines and methods. You can play your code in slow motion. You can print out values. When you're playing in slow motion, it actually shows you the values of all your variables as they're changing in real time. We have a little widget that shows you status. So this is a programmable widget, so you can tell it what things you want to follow and track, and it'll show you those things in real time as you're going along. Lots of different ways of sort of putting in breakpoints and the like. And again, in the browser, we also have the console. So and in the Python version, we have a console that's also sort of looking at log output. So we explicitly introduce debugging to the kids. And again, we've thought about it quite a bit and work with it quite a bit. Excuse me. So That is it in terms of the formal presentation. I think that we have time for probably 20 minutes, more than 20 minutes for questions, if anybody's here for asking questions. And I'd also, you know, Devin can give you a lot more detail about the music side of things and the relationship between music and mathematics and how the whole world of programming and mathematics and music all come together.
Well, let me just say like a couple things on that particular note. You know, one thing that has been great about the Sugar Labs community is its ability to, you know, onboard, you know, cross-disciplinary individuals such as myself. So I am a free software advocate, you know, since about 6 years ago. Before that, I really wouldn't have understood, you know, the implications of it. I did some research on my own and then was fortunate enough to be in Boston when, you know, some meetups sprouted up, which allowed me to hear a talk by Walter Bender on Sugar Labs. You know, because the community centers around education, you know, there's a need not just for people with skills and, you know, software development, but also in other areas as well. So when we started working together, you know, my area of expertise is music. So we were able to collaborate and on what has become Music Blocks. Now it's a learning tool that's both authentically musical and useful in a music classroom, as well as in, you know, a classroom where maybe the focus is more specifically for learning computational thinking, learning coding, whatever you want to call it. When you think of the Sugar Labs community, and when you think of a community that, you know, whatever your skill is, you can be, you know, useful, you can contribute, we can find ways for you to join us.
Yeah. I just was, Devin, noticing some of the questions in the IRC channel as well. And, you know, one of the questions is, you know, this is cool, but how come I've never heard of it? And is anybody actually using it? And two comments for those who aren't in the IRC. One of them is, yes, it is being used. Music Blocks, for example, is getting put into all the public schools in Japan as part of the Japan 2020 initiative, because they take music seriously there. And Devin actually had this really great insight into letting music teachers be more relevant by having them be not just teaching music, but also engaging the kids and more directly in mathematics and programming. And music blocks gives them that opportunity. So it makes the music education even more relevant when in the United States, to a large extent, we're phasing music out. It's a huge mistake. In Japan, they're doing absolutely the right thing. It's really wonderful to see. The other point is that I think like a lot of FOSS projects, we do a lousy job at marketing. One laptop per child, I think, you know, did a wonderful job of marketing, and everyone associated Sugar with one laptop per child. And in fact, Sugar grew out of one laptop per child as a standalone entity, and I don't think we've ever really marketed it as well as we need to. So if there are people out there in the community that have some marketing chops, we definitely could use some help there, because it's really, really good stuff. It's really, really good stuff. It's really, I mean, it's grounded in pedagogy that we've been working on for literally 50 years. And, you know, we know it works, but we definitely need to get more people actually using it. Let me check the IRC channel, see if there's more questions there.
There's a question, is this used at all in the USA?
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, but it's not used in sort of a massive way the way some other places are using it. In part, that's because the USA is really convoluted when it comes to things like this. There are more school districts in the United States than there are in the rest of the world combined by a lot. It's not a top-down kind of a thing. It's a very much a bottom-up local community thing. So it makes it even harder for us to get inroads into, you know, sort of massive programs, large-scale programs. So it's a little bit here, a little bit there.
Yeah. You know, it is being used in the U.S., but not as concentrated as in some other places. But Walter and I are both in the U.S.
Yeah. and we're both teaching with music blocks as well. There's another question in the channel about building an app and getting it tested. We have a few different vehicles for that. One of the things that we do is we have access to a number of kids that would be willing to do some testing, but we also participate every year in this program called Google Code-In. And Google Code-In is a way to reach out to teenagers all around the world. It's about an 8-week program of outreach, and we get a lot of testing done during that program. So we sort of concentrate a big part of the testing at that time.
One thing I will say is, having worked a lot with kids using, you know, the latest bits on music blocks in particular, kids are great testers. So if you're not testing your software on kids, you're really missing a big opportunity, because they will use your software in ways that you didn't originally plan. You'll learn so much from, you know, just the way they just go for it.
Yeah, I'm not. There's another question about Dynamic Land, and I'm not familiar with Dynamic Land, but I will check it out. Since we did Sugar, there's a lot of things out there that have some aspects of Sugar in them. Not very many of them are FOSS, but there are some. There actually are some very good FOSS tools out there, and. So the idea behind Sugar is not to be the only answer, but it's supposed to be an answer. And actually, the way I think about things like music blocks is that it's not just an end of, in of itself. It's a waypoint. It's a point along the way to learning about music, a point along the way to learning about programming, a point along the way to learning about mathematics. And so we don't try to capture kids in our product the way, say, a commercial organization might. Rather, we want to give kids tools. There's a fluidity about moving back and forth between the Sugar desktop and the GNOME desktop, for example. There's a fluidity in terms of how you use the tools. The tools interoperate with each other. There's a fluidity in terms of things like music blocks, where you can write music, write a program, hear the music, see some visuals, but you also can export your music as sheet music. We export to a number of different programming languages that support sheet music, like LilyPond, another really wonderful FOSS program. So we try to bring the kids to the next place. Where are they going to go after music blocks? Where are they going to go after Sugar? So we're trying to make sure that they have those doors open rather than trying to lock them down. And there's another question about Mid-Eastern temperament systems. Well, in fact, we've got that one covered. We've put a lot of thought into that. You don't have to. You can design your own temperament inside of music blocks. We support a bunch of sort of traditional standard ones, but you also can design your own. You can design your own tuning systems. You can design design your own instruments. There's lots of stuff you can do. Because we really wanted to make this a really rich place. It's sort of part of the idea is it's sort of a low floor and no ceiling, as opposed to what's typically out there for kids, which is low floor, low ceiling. And part of what gives us no ceiling, again, is the fact that we make the source code available, but also because we really get, we, so there was a colleague of mine at MIT years ago, John Maida, who had his stick was simplicity. We got to make everything simple. And I really find that offensive. I think that's really wrong. I think what we want to do is give people tools to reach to complexity, because complexity is the reality of the world. And so rather than trying to make the world simple, let's let the kids really experience that complexity and navigate that complexity. And music, and I knew almost nothing about music going into this, and Devin's been my mentor in that space, but there's a lot of richness there, and it's a lot, and learning about that's been super fun. So it's you know, again, reach to complexity, I think, is maybe my sign off for all of this. And let me just try to sort of obliquely answer one more of the questions in the IRC channel, which is, I mean, you don't want to be needlessly complex, but complexity is reality, and don't pretend it's not there. The reason why we started doing sugar to begin with was because it was clear 20 years ago, it's even more clear today, given everything that's going on right at this moment, that the next generation's inheriting a bunch of problems from us. And I don't know how to solve a lot of these problems, but what I do know is how to build tools. And the idea is to let the next generation use these tools to build solutions to problems. So I don't want to give them, again, this is why I don't give them curriculum, or I don't give them sort of a fixed do this, do this, do this, but rather here's some tools. You know the problems, go at it. And I'll be here to mentor if I can. So that's sort of how Sugar Labs works. We're always looking for mentors. We're always looking for developers and designers and everything else. So I don't know if there are any more questions or anything else we need to. Devin, do you want to say anything more about the music stuff? Or?
Well, I'm inviting people to join us on the Sugar channel on IRC. I gave some information. You can go to github.com/sugarlabs to see the code and, you know, participate in, you know, building the code. If you want to try music blocks, you can go to musicblocks.sugarlabs.org. You know, you can go to sugarlabs.org for more information. As Walter said earlier, you know, we were a member organization for Software Freedom Conservancy, which helped us for many years. Now we're moving on to being our own organization. I mean, we are now our own organization. We're seeking nonprofit status. So we're kind of in transition right now, but that's part of the future, part of this, because we really want, you know, this to grow, because we really think that what we're doing is really valuable to education and, you know, to educators and students all around the globe.
Yeah, let me take one more crack at the question that in the IRC channel about change. Human said, the world is changing and people are changing and we're always evolving, and it's part of life. And so part of, again, it's part of the complexity of life. And I think that part of what we've tried to do with Sugar is to acknowledge that and to try to support that. And one example is that, one of my quips when I was more proselytizing sugar out in the world for one laptop per child was that, you know, we think about school for children and children learning, but teachers can learn too. And we don't ever give teachers an opportunity to learn, or we don't give them enough of an opportunity to learn, and we don't support their learning. But teachers have to encounter and cope with change as well. And so it's really important to build that into your design, build that into your pedagogy. And I think that we got, again, offline, I can talk about a number of really tangible examples of teachers learning and teachers contributing through these tools that I think are really, to me, are quite inspiring. So
yeah, I did not know Git when I first met Walter. I did not know it, but now I probably have, I don't know, maybe 200 commits, mainly, you know, translations, but some minor bug fixes as well. So, you know, if I can do it, you can do it.
All right. Yeah, Robert Reed, I have this whole program I used to run called Silver Stringers that was working with the elderly, and I think that there's certainly a lot there. I just haven't had the bandwidth to really work in that space recently, but I think there's absolutely something there. And and the idea that there's a quip. I'm a grandparent now, and so there's the old expression, grandchildren and grandparents share a common enemy. But I think they also share a common opportunity. So I think they can work together to both, you know, to mentor each other. And so anyway, with that, I guess we will wrap up.
And Devin, you posted an interesting comment in the IRC about the question of how you understand kids. Would you like to speak to the audience at large on that?
Okay. Somebody asked, how do you understand? They say, okay, so you have to understand how kids see the world in order to make programs to be used by them. How do you understand kids? This is just like a personal answer, but, you know, being around kids a lot, you do understand them better. You know, I see, you know, at least, you know, 36 kids, you know, as a teacher. I also have a kid, so, you know, that helps, you know, but, you know, kids are individuals, so, you know, they're always surprising you, and I'm always learning new things from, you know, my son, for example. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, let me expand on that a little bit and say, you know, so I've done a lot of workshops all around the world with kids and with teachers, and the best workshops are when I don't speak the same language as the people I'm working with. And the reason why those workshops always end up better than the other ones is because I can't tell them what to do. So they're, if I'm not directing them, if I'm not telling them what to do, they're much more likely to actually, you know, discover interesting things on their own, and I'll be able to spend my time observing what they're doing as opposed to having them do what I tell them to do. And it's just a much, much better way to do things.
Yeah, maybe if we have some time right now, we could show them like the planet or something. I don't know, how much time do we have?
4 minutes.
Yep. Do you want to just do a little, yeah, why don't you grab the screen, Devin, and do a little demo of musical. Yeah.
Okay, I am grabbing my entire screen. It's loading up. This feature, the loading screen, was implemented by a student. There's so many features in here that are, you know, the work of students, even as young as like 13 years old. So we're really proud of that. I think it's a little slower to load because I've got Jitsi running.
Yeah, Jitsi definitely slows everything down quite a bit when you're, at least for this sort of stuff.
Yeah, so when you're in Music Blocks, you have your own projects here, but you can also access, you know, other projects published by anyone all over the world. So I don't know what some of these new ones are. Zelda,
Yeah, well, so if you go scroll up to the top.
Yeah.
And then that one's the one that Zachary Hunt is the one that my grandson just did yesterday.
So you get a little description, get some tags. We are trying to get a Git backend for this so that, you know, when somebody uploads their code, you know, they can fork projects. And then you can see the difference between the projects, just like you can with Git. It's not quite finished yet, but yeah, so. And you're going to open up someone's project and.
So just put the cursor over the mouse over the his face. Oh, I didn't hear it.
I hear the dog.
Oh, okay, you do. Okay, we don't hear your audio.
Ruff, 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 ruff.
You put it down by the hands. Each hand is a different. So this was basically just he's hidden sounds in the picture in different places. So that was what he just wrote the other day. 7-year-old. So anyway.
Okay, there you have it. Thank you so much. There's so much more to this conversation. So let's just.
Yeah, keep it going on IRC.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Thanks for contributing to LibrePlanet.